Okay, I think I've been unfortunate to be, there was a JISC something next to my my one, so actually this is pretty good for me because I don't usually get as many people as this in my at my paper, so I'm quite happy. Anyway, so I'm going to present the findings of a project that I've been engaged in for the last year. It's been really a very busy year for me. I've been really doing everything you can imagine with e-learning, all the kind of aspects I've been dealing with, people, technology. So I think I've learned a lot. And I think some of the things in this presentation you're going to find will probably resonate with all of you to some extent. But it's a very practical paper, so we won't be talking too much about theory. There'll be a little bit of theory there, but basically LAMS has allowed our institution to implement e-learning, first stage of e-learning, it's quite small scale, full e-learning courses. So this is a major breakthrough for our institution. And in fact, I don't think any institution in Cyprus now does this. So we've been very lucky that we knew about LAMS. Well, I knew about LAMS, and I saw the potential to get into these markets. So we'll look at some key findings, first of all. We've tapped into a student population. 47% of students can't attend, 47% of students doing e-learning courses couldn't actually attend class. So there's definitely a market here for e-learning courses. We tapped into it and we invested a very small amount of money, and we made actually massive returns on that money. So that's another very positive thing. 80% of our students found e-learning very easy. Using the system was very easy, so we didn't have too many problems teaching the students to use the system. Quite interesting overall finding. I'm giving you the overall findings first before we go into the main presentation. It seems that weaker students academically, like students with lower CPAs, lower GPAs, they seem to perform better in e-learning than stronger students with higher CPAs. So that was quite an interesting finding. And we thought that the explanation for that was that they could re-listen to recorded lectures, they could listen to them again and benefit from, even though they couldn't benefit from classroom interaction, the stronger students, obviously, maybe they gain more from classroom interaction, therefore they didn't seem to perform as well in the e-learning courses. I will talk about how e-learning courses are, what the criteria are for grading e-learning courses. So the main finding here is that with a very small investment, I think it was about 13 or 14,000 euros, very, very small investment, with good use of technology, good advice from our computer, the head of the computer studies, Dmitry Apraksin, we managed to make hundreds of thousands of euros, which is very, very good first sign. You don't need to invest millions of euros to implement e-learning. You can do it on a very small budget and you can do it very high quality. And I hope to show you some examples of the high quality of lectures that we're now offering. So let's just go through that. I'm gonna go through this quite quickly because I think this presentation is going to be more than the allotted time. I think that was a lamb. Well, so I'm going to show some basic screenshots here. This is our main LAMS webpage. We've got student films to help students learn how to use the system. I think I may have one, if I can find it. Probably not, but something like Camtasia Studio, which is only about $200. But you can actually do quite professional films, edit them, have them there, and...
LAMS student training videos. Now, the idea of these training videos
is... You can annotate them. You can put text in the videos. $250, and you can actually create professional, but pretty good videos that certainly are good enough to use for online students. We've got a help desk, which is an email, but we've also got a... Oh, this is an older version. We've actually got a number there that takes the student to a telephone and they can record a message. We have two BlackBerry mobile phones as well, so they can get through to a BlackBerry as well. So we're actually providing very good support for students that are taking e-learning courses, and we're providing telephone support. And the cost here is minimal, really. I mean, it's just a lab assistant checks every day the phone calls. And we've got three servers now, three LAMS servers. We're engaging in professional studies programs as well, ACCA and ACA programs. We've got about 15 courses up to now. These are full e-learning courses, so each course, I'll talk about the structure of an e-learning course later, but we're expanding, we're trying to expand. There are real, we have serious problems with a term that I'll call cannibalization. I'll try and explain that term later. But serious resistance from lecturers. They see e-learning, many lecturers see e-learning as a grave threat to their jobs. So let's move on to... Now, we've used Articulate software quite a lot. I'm not sure whether you're aware of this software. I'll show you an example of Articulate software. I can just see. I think I had an example here somewhere. No. Yeah. Articulate software allows a flashback.
In this lecture, we're going to look at the nature of cultural geography and give you a little bit of a background.
It's good thing about Articulate software, it's flash-based presentations. You can jump from the beginning to the end.
Here are some examples of the...
quite quickly, and I imagine this comes from software.
What is geography? First,
we can have a 90-minute lecture, 7 megabytes in size. I think it's very effective, and this technology is used for delivering the lecture, the recorded lecture. I think it's quite high quality. It's got different views as well. You can put notes here. But there's also there are also other software packages like Articulate. Where's my PowerPoint presentation gone? Articulate Engage, Articulate Quizmaker, Articulate Video Maker. So the problem with actually putting videos here, and I have done that in some of my courses, actually put videos. It takes up a lot of memory. So sorry about this, James. I keep clicking your presentation. Oh, here's mine. Okay. So we've utilized this software, and that's kind of changed our learning design a little bit. As I said, new software packages tend to shorten the sequence length because there's so much you can do within one presentation, because it's PowerPoint, but you can put quizzes within a PowerPoint presentation, you can put interactive slides there, you can use branching within within a PowerPoint presentation. So it's shortened the length of the sequence. We also use Camtasia 7, version 7, but I showed you an example of that, and that's been very useful in supporting students with submissions, with how to prepare for the final exam. So looking at some of the tools we've got here in LAMS, and I know the colours are lovely, and it's nice to have colourful tools, and some tools are reflective, some are supposedly informative, but there is overlap between these definitions, I think. So some tools, you could argue, are not only informative, maybe share resources could arguably be collaborative as well, because students can actually upload resources and share them with each other. There are definitions there, but we found that we don't need to use all those tools. We actually only use these tools here. And the most important tool is Notice Board, because we can frame these Articulate lectures within Notice Board. And Forum is also a very important tool, and QA. We don't use chat so much because there are technical issues with the chat client. We use Submit File a lot, and Assessment Tool. Occasionally we use branching, and if we're doing, say, some pedagogies for nursing, where critical thinking, inquiry-based learning is important, we would use branching there. So branching is definitely a powerful tool. Now, in my mind, this is how I kind of visualize the pedagogy. I see lecture talk, teacher talk. So Articulate presenter there, maybe a Camtasia studio recording, but mainly it's Articulate. Some kind of interaction after the teacher input, which is logical. You'd need some kind of... But that kind of interaction is written-based. So forum, chat, QA, that's all written-based interaction. That's where we are currently with these kinds of tools. What I feel we don't have is something... Well, dim, yeah, that's Illuminus actually with an E, but some kind of new tool where you can get more human-to-human contact with students. It hasn't come... I thought maybe Second Life, maybe Avatar, something you put a helmet on your on your face, and you actually go into a 3D classroom with an avatar, and you actually can have a live lecture there. I think that's got a, that might change learning design dramatically if you had that kind of technology. I'm not a big fan of video conferencing because I think currently it's too complicated. There are too many things happening on the screen. It's too messy. So, and it's also quite expensive to use some of the better systems like Illuminates, and DimDim has a free version, but it's not so good. And then we've got some kind of assessment after that. Okay. Now, originally, the size of the groups, the online groups, they look like this, like that. So you could actually log into any lecture in any order. But that meant that monitoring was quite, took up a lot of teacher time. So I revised that to this kind of e-course content. So there'd be a course overview, a public forum, for which is used quite a lot by lecturers and communication with students. Then all the lectures would basically be in one sequence there, or possibly two, depending on the number of lectures. And a lecture would comprise a number of activities, mainly QA, maybe assessment. Quite traditional, really. But that's what our students, that's how they grew up. The epistemologies of our students are such. They expect to be tested. They want to get a grade. That's how it works there for most of our students. We also have some subject specific forum activities as well. So I think this was a political science course, so there are some forum there. But forum activities don't work with science, with mathematics. You couldn't really need such forum activities. We also provide PDF, printable PDFs of all the lectures, because I was told by Dimitri there's some European Union policy now to provide some kind of printable version of a lecture for blind students. Every course has a submission or two, and every course has videos on how to revise for the final exam. Now, in Cyprus, we have to have a final exam, a summative exam that would be about 60 to 70% of the entire course. They are the restrictions, so we have to follow them. There have been a lot of administrative issues, I'll try and go through them very quickly here. We had to advertise the courses, and actually it's not obvious how you should advertise courses, because so few students actually go to the student intranet and want to have a look there. So it took time for students to find out that we were offering these courses. We had to put posters up in the university, but I think more and more students now know that they exist. And that's a good thing, because then they are pressurizing lecturers. They're asking questions, is there an e-learning course for your subject, which is good for the implementation of e-learning generally, because I think the pressure should come from students to get lecturers to do e-learning courses and not from administration. Okay, we've got a range of courses for different subjects, from psychology, we've got political science, mathematics, accountancy, so we're expanding courses. We're planning to do some nursing courses as well, and accountancy courses. This is what a student gets when they log in, when they register for a course. They'll get within one day. It's very quick. The University of Washington takes a week. We take one day in Cyprus, which you might be surprised about. We're very quick. We give them a login. We give them training films on how to read, how to actually log into the system. So it's a 25-minute training film. You can watch it. It's on the LAMS webpage. They get a link to an e-support handbook, which is about 80 or 90 pages long with all the regulations, the university. We also give students this thing, because we found that about 20% of our students don't know how to access the university intranet email, which you might be surprised about, but 20%. So we actually had to prepare special films to help students learn how to access their email so they could actually get their logins, because we had some students coming to us two months into doing a course last semester saying, I didn't get the email, I didn't get the login. And we sent it to them, but they don't know that they got it. So, and in a way, I felt that we should be more accountable. I mean, myself and our institution, we should take more that kind of job. We have to be more serious about that to make sure that they get their login. So we actually set up a special person that now rings up students within a week. 5 minutes. Okay, let's carry on. Many students don't view the training film, so we actually had to have one of these pop-ups to get them to watch the training film. They still don't watch the training film, a lot of them. We also found that we have a lot of students with low CPA, so we've got this little form here that I want to start next semester, get them to reflect whether they think they're suitable for e-learning at all, whether they can study by themselves. Some students drop in and out of courses, so when they drop out, we have to log them out of the system. We send them this email, and some students decide to log back into a course, so we have to send them another email, and LAMS has been very versatile in the sense that it keeps the data there. So even if a student's removed from a group, we can still put that student back in the group and no data will be lost. So that impressed me a lot. I mentioned this term cannibalization, and this was a real problem in our institution, and is a real problem, that many lecturers feel threatened that if they or somebody else does an e-course, they might lose their face-to-face course. And actually, they are losing their face-to-face courses because our university has now realised that it earns so much money from e-learning that it's not going to increase its expenses by having more courses for a certain discipline. So I try to deal with cannibalisation in this way. It's not really working 100%, but it does help a little bit. I try to mention to lecturers that future student attrition, you know, maybe we're moving into a depression, a world depression. It's very good to have these courses ready just in case we get drops in student numbers, so we can access new markets. Students seem to prefer e-learning, and that's I tell lecturers that, and probably lecturers hear that as well. It's also it's an investment in themselves. It's a savvy professional development investment. I'm amazed that more lecturers don't come and not banging my door begging me to help them do their e-learning courses. I'm amazed there's so much resistance, but clearly it's a very good investment. Maybe these e-courses will be our pensions in the future, and probably they will. If you think by the time we're 60 or 70, if we have 20 or 30 e-learning courses running, that may effectively become a pension for us. And also e-learning can enhance face-to-face courses. We've had a lot of technical issues. Let me just go to the main issue. I coined this term, it's a bit of a tongue twister, skills, LAMS, teacher, representative materials uploader. What that really means is I'm doing effectively what Jill does. I negotiate with lecturers. Lecturers do no authoring, they just give me the content. I put the content up into the system, but I negotiate with the lecturers the kinds of things they'd like to do. Generally, they don't seem to have many ideas about what they should put into a learning design, so I suggest things to them. But after a semester, sometimes they come back to me and they say, listen, I'd like to take this out of the learning design. They never say, I want to put something in. And very often, things they want to take out are the QA tools, because it's a lot of work for them. So the lectures are quite pragmatically minded in that sense. E-learning course creation. Most of the work for e-learning courses starts at the beginning. I mean, that's the peak workload, whereas face-to-face courses tend to have a different kind of workload throughout a semester. So that's a different point. Let me just see what we've got here. Now, another thing I've noticed about students working online is that so many of them don't seem to have self-study skills. They want to do an e-learning course, they think it's a cool thing to do, but they don't have these self-study skills. So we've actually, this semester, we monitor all the students and we ring them up, the ring students up that are not working, so they get a bit of personal contact with a person that's been specially assigned to ringing them up. But it would be good, and I think James has said he will look into this, automating this system, so the system can actually respond to this issue. These, you know, human beings, maybe not all human beings have these study skills, so the institution should be more responsible and aware of this problem and actually try and support students more. SCORM integration. Okay, well, is that okay, James? Or let me just log out. This is just an administrative account of some courses we run. I'll just actually log out of that. We don't need that. Are there any questions? Yeah.
I was wondering, who's the teachers who are delivering the e-learning courses?
Okay.
I'm concerned how there were people who 2 or 3 months into the course hadn't logged in and that hadn't been spotted by the course.
Well, it had been spotted, but the thing is, this semester, the summer one semester, we've been far more organised, so every student that's late has been rung up. Every week we ring them up now. And actually, I think that's too much to ring them up. Some students are getting annoyed. But last semester was kind of baptism of fire semester for us, and we didn't realise that so many students would be late. And I told the lecturers to start ringing these students up, but we couldn't actually contact them, many of them. Their mobile phones were off. Some emails weren't working, and it's actually a very big job to ring up, say, 20 students or 15 students and tell them and try and when can you ring them up? As the lecturers were spending like half the day trying to ring these students up and tell them to start working. So it was a serious problem because many e-learning students simply do not work on a regular basis. So is that the responsibility of the educational institution, or should that be the responsibility of the student? I mean, it's a question to think
about. It seems like maybe there should be some activity that requires participation.
There were activities, yeah. But they simply weren't working.
But they still paid their fee.
Well, you laugh about that, but they still paid their fee. Their parents paid their fee. If you understand what that means.
Now, were the students attending lectures as well, or is this an
No, this was all e-learning, full e-learning course.
So they weren't on campus?
No. But actually, some students during the questionnaire sessions, they said they would like to have face-to-face during the semester, and I thought, wow, this is like really interesting feedback from the students. Actually, some students felt that they wanted that human contact. So some courses now, we arrange optional face-to-face contact during the semester so they can meet their lecturer.
And what about the assessment or the exam?
Yeah, final exam is actually written, it's in the institution, so that's it's a usual written paper, but there are online midterms that are timed. But you can't assign a lot of points to those. Most of the points go to submissions and taking part in activities like forum, like QA.
Do you have only one final exam?
Yeah.
Chris, do you mind going back to that slide where you showed just the typical course?
Oh yeah, okay.
The one where you had lectures 1 to 6, and then that one.
Oh, this one.
That one, yeah. So, just for anyone who didn't realise it, Chris has actually basically used LAMS to do all of the things of a typical BLE or course management system, which I think is very interesting. You know, there's a link there to the course overview, which is just a link to a single tool with that document in it.
Yeah.
And so you're actually seeing everything that people might otherwise have done in Moodle or Blackboard or whatever has actually been done completely in LAMS. Although that's probably not the most typical use of LAMS out there, but when I saw this work of Chris at his University of Oswego, it was fascinating to see, you know, all these courses being run in this way.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite a significant sort of new use of LAMS.
And for 10 or 12 courses, full e-courses, we have about 200 students per semester. So if we had 100 courses, it would be like 2,000. It would be a huge income for the university. And the university has now agreed to upgrade its IT to invest €500,000 in having better servers. So they've been quite impressed. And I just think that with a very small amount of investment, it's got to the stage where we're looking at millions of euros of income. We've gone for LAMS as our management system, which is, we're happy with it. Good.
Okay, well, John, thank you, Chris.